Hi, I'm the self-development coach, Johnny Lawrence, and welcome to the Self-Development Podcast. In today's episode, I have the honor and the privilege of speaking with inspirational speaker, coach, and breast cancer survivor, Louise McMillan. This is an incredibly powerful episode as Louise is brave enough to speak in depth about her breast cancer survivor story. Due to this, I wanted to make sure people were aware, as Louise does go into detail that may be distressing if you're not prepared for it. Louise is truly a remarkable human being that has been through literally some unbelievable experiences and has somehow found the resilience and the self-belief to continue to fight. She also shares her experiences in her early life around depression, self-confidence, and self-belief issues, and offers this wonderful perspective on how it's often our perception of how others see us that dictates how we end up seeing ourselves. Just before we jump into our conversation, I just wanted to make a correction. A few minutes into this conversation, I referenced the incredible Donna Lancaster, a former guest on the show, but for some unknown reason, I refer to Donna as Donna Langston. I have absolutely no idea why I did that. It was just simply a mistake. But for those who may not have come across Donna Lancaster yet, I wanted to make that correction. My sincere apologies. So let's not wait a second longer. Let's get to it. So how are you today, Louise?
I'm really good, thank you, Johnny, and thank you so much for inviting me. And it's great to finally be able to sit down and have this good chat with you today.
Yeah, I'm so sorry about all the messing
don't
around.
Don't worry, you're human. It's fine. We're all human. It's okay. It's not the end of the world.
I want to say that it was that there was some sort of miraculous reason, but it was simply technology and my inability to use it. So there you go. But how are you today? Anyway, you okay?
Yes, I'm very well, thank you. Yes, looking forward to chatting to you some more.
So am I. I'm looking forward to people hearing your journey. I mean, we've had a few brief talks ourselves, and I've heard quite, you know, a fair bit of what you mm-hmm. may well talk about today. But every time I hear it or think about it, I get goosebumps. So I'm really looking forward to you speaking about it. Would you mind starting there, actually, telling people about your remarkable journey towards becoming the person you are today?
Okay, so just to understand where I've come from is the fact that I've always had limiting self-belief and lack of self-confidence. And to me, that's not believing in who I am and how I approach things. And even though things have gone well, it's like I'm going to be found out that, you know, I'm an imposter and, you know, those kind of things. And that was very much from my 20s right up until my mid-40s. So, you know, it kind of impacted on my professional life, and I had a very good career within HR, and also impacted on my personal relationships as well and in love. And you know, I kept spiraling from that into anxiety and into depression, and it was a continual cycle over the years. And it took me having breast cancer 4 years ago for me to really get a wake-up call about it was okay to be me, and, you know, and that's not changing me drastically, it was just about me being comfortable in myself, and that me being that realization that it's other people's opinions or our perception of other people's opinions of us, should have put my teeth in, opinions of us, that stops us from sometimes doing what it is we want to do. So that's a kind of nutshell, well, the kind of grounding, I suppose, a bit that kind of is the big impact. And yeah,
what do you think it was that sort of gave birth to those original issues in the first place?
It was listening to family members, you know, school and college friends. You know, something when it's kind of something is said and you just kind of register it, and so you go, oh right, okay, it's not acceptable to be like that. But it's really, you kind of go, well, who made you look now? It's easy to look now, you know,
of course,
in your 40s and go, well, who made you judge of that? But when you're younger, it's that whole kind of thing of trying to fit in. And, you know, I've got quite a quirky sense of humour in some respects, you know, and it would stifle me. And little things that, you know, I always felt like I stifled who I was. So that when you kind of met someone, you know, went on a date or something, it's like, well, who am I now? Am I Louise and my family, Louise with my friends, Louise the HR professional? Do you see what I mean? And
it's
which hat am I wearing? And, you know, I think that kind of just kept eating away at me. And, you know, when people try and say to you, you've done better than I ever thought you would, and then when you're doing stuff at work, you're kind of going, well, is this right? Because this seems too easy. Because in your head, you're going, well, I've done better than people thought I was, so am I faking it? And I think that's all kind of where it stems from, really. And I guess my inner voice chatters too much.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've just literally described imposter syndrome in a nutshell, haven't you? That conflict of really strongly, deeply believing that you're not worth it, but not being able to find the evidence, but still believing that you're not worth it. That feeling is such a powerful feeling as well, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, it's like doing anything, you get some feedback and you get 9 really great feedback and you get 1 not so good feedback. You home in on that and you go, right, that's it. It was an absolutely horrendous course, whatever you've run. Or, you know, you're asking for feedback from managers. Well, like, it's you know, awful because one person said one thing. And it's like, well, you know, it's understanding where that comes from. And that's sometimes their experiences and their perception. And
of course,
standards, we all have different expectations, but sometimes we never sit down and discuss those to understand where everybody else is coming from.
No, we just put them into a little box of this is a fact, and then we run with it, don't we? And then we pile more facts on, or more facts, quote unquote, on top of those original facts. Before you know it, we're completely lost. As you say, that magical word of hindsight, so easy to see where things go wrong. It's like, hindsight's brilliant. Unfortunately, it's happened.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I try and say sometimes, you know, I can't get the years back that I've lost, and people just say, well, you haven't lost years, it's made who you are. And I'm like, yeah, but I think I could have worked it out in 5 years rather than 15 years.
And also
it's that whole thing that I used to think that I was wired wrong. So I used to think that it was only ever me that thought these things. I thought everybody else was fine, they were able to go and do what they want. And it's over the years you learn that everybody else suffers from that imposter syndrome. Everybody else has that inner voice that's, you know, I call mine cretatina. You know, it's like a cretin because they're stupid. And it's that thing of everybody has them, and it's how you manage that voice. And there are some people that just ignore it and just go about, and there's others like me that kind of go, oh, they must be right.
It's that feel, that the word that sprung to mind then is shame, isn't it? When you don't speak those things out loud and it just stays in there, doesn't it? And causes all that uncomfortable feelings. Already I'm inspired.
Thank you.
Have you ever heard of a lady called Donna Langston?
I don't think I have, no.
No, she's a wonderful lady who's just come into sort of my life recently. And she talks about the sort of feeling of a lack of identity. And she says that there's the 5 A's, and I think it's attention, affection, acceptance, appreciation, and allowance. And she says that if you get those things in a constant flow through your life as a child, that you will be fairly well balanced moving forward. But if any one of those things lacks, it can create a real identity crisis within the person. And when I heard, I mean, I've got goosebumps in this moment, because when I think about that as a notion, I just find it amazing. And it just sprung to mind then when you were talking about that battle for identity, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think you're right, because I'm a middle child. So I'm 1 of 3 girls. So it's not, I think sometimes it's a little bit different to 3 of you, but there's different genders, but I'm the middle one of 3 girls. So I was never the first one to do anything. I'm not the baby of the family. Yeah. And, you know, there's quite a big age gaps between us. And I think that sometimes is, I was always the peacemaker. So I learned from my older sister. So therefore there was things I didn't do because I didn't want to rock the boat or whatever. And then my younger sister, who was quite a bit younger than me, well, by then, you know, because she's the baby, she got away with everything, and do you know what I mean? And it's like, you know, who am I in the middle of all this? So
I mean,
because you try and keep the peace and be the peacemaker and try and do what, you know, what mum and dad think are like the good things to do, and you do that, it means that their attention then is on the others. And you kind of go, and sometimes you get middle children, they say they're the worst because they're trying to shout because they want to be seen. I did the opposite because I just wanted to be known as not the troublemaker.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you were coaching from a young age, actually. It sounds like you were trained from very young. which is my next question, Rich, really. What drew you towards helping others?
Do you know, it's always been something I've always wanted to do, is work with people. When I was younger, I wanted to be a policewoman.
Right.
You know, I wasn't tall enough to in the Avon and Somerset area, because they obviously had height restrictions back in those days. And then of course I kind of did my college some business studies, and I went into payroll to start off with, and then moved into HR. And that to me was about helping other people, and that's what I enjoyed, was about understanding people and how to help them. And I loved the whole recruitment side of things, because you're making a positive difference. But after a while, I think you realise that it's kind of constrained, and you know, there's sometimes no helping people. And my background in it as a hobby was girl guiding, so very heavily involved with the guides over the years, even around my own girl guides unit. And I think from that, you know, when you're doing that and you become a patrol leader, and then you help organise the units, and then I had a gap and then came back to help. It was just trying to make, you know, just to help other people get the best out of them. And I suppose it's just always been there. So it was just a natural thing for me to do. And obviously I'm one of the eldest in like families with regards to cousins. I'm in the sort of top of, you know what I mean, of the 10 of us, I'm like the third oldest. So do you know what I mean? There's always been younger people around, and then becoming an auntie at 18. That was sort of, I suppose that's just been there.
Yeah, I mean, what's that feeling that you get from helping people? What? How would you describe that feeling? What is it?
I don't know. It's like you just can't help but smiling, and there's just a warmth where, you know, you've just made a difference, and that could be something as simple as just listening to them.
Oh yeah.
If someone to say to you, going, "You've made such a difference," you go, "Well, I've done is sat here and listened to you," but actually, people just want to be heard.
They do.
And my motto from my HR career sometimes was, if I've made somebody laugh today, my job is done. Or made somebody smile, because that's sometimes what you want them to do. You want them to go away with a good feeling.
Yeah.
You know, and whatever that could be. And I think that sometimes that's probably my quirkiness coming through, where, you know, you do something a bit silly, people go, "That's silly," but you go away and you've made a difference to them, and they're just, you know.
Yeah, I think sometimes people overthink it, don't they? I mean, I often say to my to people that, you know, it's very rare that I'm going to have the answer to your problem. they know the answer, and you know, we get them friends that are seeking validation, right? They've got this idea and they want you to go with it so they can feel a bit better about their idea or whatever. And then there's some people that straight up just don't want to make a difficult decision, and they want you to tell them the answer.
Absolutely.
As coaches, I mean, that's pretty much what coaching training is. It's learning not to do that, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think, to be honest with you, I've always been like that and said, well, what can I do to help? What is it you need to know? And I think because I've always resented people saying to me, "What do you want to do that for?" or "You won't achieve that," which, you know, you learn in later life is through their own beliefs and what they've been taught, that you kind of let the people go, and well, if that's what you want to do, then do it. But what do you need to do? What help do you need? And what can you, you know, what's stopping you? And you kind of, as you know, as a coach, you do that. But yeah, so it's, I suppose in some ways it just comes naturally.
It does. Yeah. It was hard for me. I loved giving out advice. I had to stop. I was like, come on now. so yeah, I had to unlearn that sort of trait, really. Imagine that whenever you felt stuck, low in confidence, or just felt unsure about something, you had somewhere to go. I'm not talking about a self-help book or an online guru. I'm talking about actual space online where we can come together with real people and access actionable tools to help you get from where you are now to where you'd like to be. So that's what we've built, the School of Self-Development. We're going to provide you with one-to-one self-development coaching, on-demand courses, growth articles, and insights from industry leaders in self-development. And the best part, a community that you can feel part of and feel safe when you're reaching out for support. So whether you need help plucking up the courage to finally change careers, commit to a major decision, or simply be able to commit more time to your family, whatever the goal, ambition, or aspiration is, the School of Self-Development was made for you. Visit our website, schoolofselfdevelopment.com, and make sure you book in time to say hello. School of Self-Development, your number one source of self-development. I want to sort of change lanes a little bit, because a big part of your story is obviously your very brave battle with breast cancer. Would you be okay to discuss sort of the original diagnosis and then the sort of battle itself?
Yeah, absolutely, because how my cancer was found is you know, when I tell my story, people just keep saying it's remarkable. So it was sort of around about April of 2017, I noticed a discharge from my left breast. And I noticed it on my pajama tops, which was a little bit strange. It was a bit like a dry wet mark, if that makes sense. And it happened a couple of times. And I thought, that's a bit strange. So I went and saw a GP at my, obviously, doctor's surgery, and said to her, and she examined me, she said, I don't think there's anything untoward, but let me refer you to be on the safe side. I said, okay. So I went along and had an appointment with a consultant who examined me and said, I don't think there's anything untoward. Of course, they examined both breasts. And he said, it could be a blocked milk duct. Now, I've not children, but my mum and one of my sisters, obviously my sisters had children, so they've had a blocked milk duct. So, you know, it's that kind of thing of, well, I think you can, you know, you have that even if you haven't had children. It's just one of those things.
Right.
So I had a mammogram and I had an ultrasound. And when they were doing the ultrasound, they said, you need to take a biopsy for my right breast, which I queried because it was my left one that I had the concern with. Bless them, they did the ultrasound all over again. They said, no, there's something here on your right. So they did a biopsy and didn't think anything of it. My mum and I, my mum had a cyst many years ago. I can't remember what the long name is, but they kind of refer to it as a mouse, as the kind of the shortened version that they kind of call it.
Right.
But the following week, I had a phone call to say, could you come in? They had a cancellation. So I went on in and took my mum with me, and they said they detected breast cancer on my right breast. Now, I didn't find a lump. GP didn't find a lump. The consultant didn't find a lump.
Wow.
So there was nothing wrong with my left, and it was by these tests to be on the safe side is how they found it. They, you know, as you can imagine, we were just absolutely in shock.
Yeah.
So they told me that they thought it was 25 millimetres and stage two, and the following week they would do a lumpectomy. But this is where my quirky sense of humour kind of came in a little bit, because all I could think about from leaving the hospital to getting back to my car was what I was going to name it. And that was all that was going through my head. And I called it Stan.
Okay.
So any
reason for that, or just...
The first name I came up with was Bert, but my great nephew was called Robert. And I tease him when he says his name is Rob. And I go, no, it's Bert. So it was too close to home.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking probably like Bert begins with B and it's my boob. I don't know, I just kind of thought of Stan. So Stan was quite famous, I suppose, between my close friends and family that week, kind of as we talked about it, you know, kind of thing. So I had the lumpectomy, which went well, not a problem. And I had to wait a few weeks until I got the results back. So I had my lumpectomy on the 20th of June, and it was the 5th of July I got my results back. And I had a gut feeling the day before that I was going to have to go down chemo. It was a bit hard to say. I just had this gut feeling that this just wasn't the end of it.
Right.
And I remember talking to my mum in the waiting room and said to her, she went, oh, you've been so positive. Don't, you know, stop, don't worry about this. Well, of course, we went in to see the other consultant that did the operation. And basically, Stan was a lot bigger than they thought. It was actually 45 millimetres, not 25.
Wow.
So nearly twice the size that they thought from the scans.
Yeah.
And they removed three lymph nodes, and two of my lymph nodes tested positive for cancer. Cyril and Sydney, as I call them, and which meant that it was now stage three, and I was going to have to go down the chemo route. So I was kind of, I suppose, fine, because in my gut was, this is what we're going to go down. My poor mum was just absolutely beside herself, and, you know, it was in total shock again, lover. And I suppose it's because I, you know, you sometimes know, don't you, have a gut feeling, and it goes that way. You go, that's fine. I can deal with it. So I had to go down the chemo route. So it was literally a month later, the 20th of July, that I had my first chemo. However, my body decided that this wasn't dramatic enough breast cancer. A week after my chemo, I started to get stomach ache, and I just thought it was the side effects from the chemo. Nobody in my family, we've had cancer in the family on my dad's side. My dad, his sister, his parents have had cancer, but nobody else. But nobody's had to go down chemo. So I was kind of the first one, and none of my friends have. So we thought it was a side effect of the chemo. Didn't do anything about it. The week I was due to have my second chemo, I decided that I couldn't carry on like this. And I decided that I was going to go and see the doctor. Couldn't wait to see my consultant the following day. Saw the same GP, and she said, if you came to me with just this, I would say it was appendicitis. So admitted me straight to hospital. I had another CT scan. So my CT scan had come back clear that there was no cancer anywhere else, which was great news, but overshadowed by the fact that I was in this agony.
So just to confirm, how long had you had the stomach pains?
Literally, so it would have been a week after. So we're probably talking about 4 years ago right now.
Yeah.
So literally, I had it. So it was the Monday I went back in. So we are talking about 10 days.
Wow.
I had the stomach ache before I went in.
Because I've had appendicitis, a rupture, and that's painful. I only had the pain for 1 day, though. So you put up with 10 days.
I mean, I had the stomach ache, and it was the Sunday where I hadn't gone to my parents. I was at home, and all of a sudden, gone to the bathroom, woken up from a sleep, gone to the bathroom, came back down, and all of a sudden my body was in like a bit of a spasm. I was in absolute agony on the front doorstep waiting. I opened the door, waiting for my mum to come or my nephew. I managed to walk my way to the end of the drive because a neighbour had come home but hadn't seen me. Made my way to the end of my drive, but everyone kept saying to me, yeah, but you don't know what your pain's like. You haven't, I suppose it's that thing of, what would I know what my pain's like? I haven't had children. So I don't know my pain threshold.
Yeah.
So everyone kept saying to me, I kept saying, go to hospital. No, be fine, drink some water. So I carried on like this for ages. I didn't have a temperature. So the oncology unit was like, it's fine. It's just obviously stomach ache. So I carried on. And then when I went to see the GP and she said, I'm admitting you straight to hospital. I think it's suspected appendicitis. Had another CT scan. The consultant, who was the original consultant I saw at the hospital, he came and saw me in the hospital. My mum and dad was there, and he just said to me, you are a very, very poorly young lady. You are not at all well. So the appendix had burst on that Sunday, and it had now in an abscess, which was stuck to my bowel and my colon. I was dehydrating something chronic. I couldn't get enough water down in. He kept saying to me, you're going to have to stop drinking water because otherwise I can't operate and I need to operate. So the following morning, and I was in agony that night, real bad agony that night, I remember. And so we went up, he tried to do keyhole and he couldn't. And so therefore it was that case of, it was major emergency surgery. I've now got a scar from the top of my belly button to the top of my bikini line. So it's about a 6-inch scar going down my stomach. He got it. Well, I had to obviously remove some of my bowel and my colon to get it all out. I was in intensive care with my hair falling out because obviously by now, after day 13, after chemo, your hair starts falling out. I had to have a blood transfusion and I'm in intensive care for 48 hours. Come out of intensive care and into a hospital ward the night before my 45th birthday.
I'm absolutely speechless. That is too much for one person. That really is. That's just too much.
Was it the chemo that started it? And they just said it was just bad luck. It didn't stop there. The week after my operation, I had an infection in my wound. From the operation. So they had to open me up on the ward. So I've then got open, like a couple of centimetres long, a couple of centimetres deep. And they had to put a vacuum pack on me, which got all the badness out because they wanted to get me back onto, I had to get back onto the chemo as quickly as possible. Because if you leave it too long, then they'll just kind of go into the radiotherapy. So I had this vacuum pack on me for 4 weeks. I was in hospital for 2 whole weeks. And then once that was done, then I was able to get back onto the, as I call it, the chemo train.
I mean, that, I don't even know where to start with that. That is so much for one person to go through. The fact that you've been through it is just remarkable. I almost have too many questions and no questions at the same time. That must have been the hardest thing and the most challenging thing that you've ever been through. And I'm just so sorry to hear that that happened to you. I really am.
Yeah. It's sometimes it's kind of a bit unbelievable now, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Because, you know, 4 years on, it's like, how did that sometimes actually happen? But then I look where I am now to where I was beforehand and gone, well yeah, because it's taught me so much. You know, you always hear people say life is too short.
Yeah.
And prior to being diagnosed, I'd gone through a real bad back with depression. Been diagnosed with depression again, was on medication, and 2017 was all about rebuilding myself up again. And then to have this, you know, it was that big lesson. Yeah, you're right, life is too short. And just having the cancer itself was big enough. But I remember being in hospital, and my mum had been in to see me, and I was getting messages from HR colleagues that I hadn't caught up with for a couple of years, because you tell a couple of friends and they know someone else that knows where you worked, and then, you know, you have a messages from, you know, an ex-colleague that lives in Swindon that I haven't seen for about 5 years going, I hear you're in hospital, I hear you've got this, you know where I am. And the overwhelm of just the support. And I said to my mum, I said, I didn't realize I was liked. I actually said, she says, I didn't realize I was liked. And you kind of go in, because it was just overwhelm of all this love and support coming my way.
I mean, that is one of the most horrendous ways that I've ever heard anybody come to the realization that those limiting beliefs that cause the anxiety and the depression, the low self-esteem, weren't true. I mean, like, it sounds like a theme in our conversation so far. It feels like a theme of like, there was an easier way.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I mean, where did you even start? I mean, let's start with like, in that moment, in that time when you were doing it, how did you find the strength just to keep fighting? How did you find it?
Because I think it was decided that this wasn't going to beat me. You know, when you have depression, you kind of think sometimes, life's just hard. What am I doing here? What impact am I making? And so you have that and you kind of go, no, I'm not ready to go yet. Mm-hmm. So you do, and you just find this strength and belief. I didn't even know I had. So when people are saying, you're surprising me, going, I'm surprising myself. And, you know, I bought a wig, but I never wore it. I decided that I was going to go bald. You know, and it's that thing of, you know, if you told me beforehand, you know, I've got the wig just in case, you know, and I've got some scarves, and, you know, I'm someone even now washes their hair every single day. But do you know what I mean? The whole thing about losing your hair, and it's like, well, it's going to happen. I can't change it. You just got to live with it. But then to decide that, you know, I was going to be bold. And I remember my mum saying, we'd gone into the hospital to have a checkup. And she said to me, I think you ought to start wearing your wig. And I'm like, why? She said, the children are staring. And I went, we stood outside a hospital, they're going to stare anyway. And I thought, no, I'm going to manage it my way. This is something that nobody around me has been through before. So why do they tell me what to do? I'm going to do this my way. It's my cancer. It's my journey. And that's it. And that's what I was just determined to do. And to me, it was just like, this is the bubble I'm living in. And, you know, if you don't like it, then you have to deal with that, not me. I've got enough to deal with.
What I'm hearing there is you were building, you were creating, you were developing this sense of worth. Like, all of a sudden you knew, I want to stay here. You know, I want to keep going. I'm worth it. I'm going to fight. No one's going to tell me what to do. And I can hear that trust in yourself starting to build too.
Yeah.
And I tell you something, there's not a single person in this universe that can tell me that you are not one of the strongest people. Because my goodness, the strength that you have to go up against that, it requires strength for me to listen to it, let alone have to go through it. That's something else entirely. So that worth, that trust, that purpose of fighting forward, that's what got you through it. But how did you rebuild your life afterwards? Because I mean, you know, after anything devastating happens, there's always this settling period where everyone's sort of pleased that you're okay, you're pleased that you're okay and that you're moving forward. But there must have been another feeling that followed that. And what was that like? And how did you get through that?
Yeah, I think that there's two really. The first one is, you know, you finish the appointments, you have your radiotherapy and you're all done. And now you're having sort of other appointments, but the main crux of the weekly meetings and everything, appointments, everything stop. And there was a feeling of loss. What do I do now? Because in this, I was working on interim contracts. So I'd started a new interim contract just before I was diagnosed, and that ended while I was in hospital. And my doctor was very much about, knowing my history with anxiety and everything else, I just need you to concentrate on this.
So, is that what the loss was for the work, or?
The loss was actually direction. Where do I go now? Because you're in this thing about where I'm going. And I've gone and I found a new job. And it's kind of like, what do I do with myself? I've got to find a new job now, because you've been in this sort of 9 months of medical appointments and just taking each week as it comes. And then all of a sudden the medical appointments stop and it's like, now what? I've got to get another job. And my doctor was very much of going, of course, if I'd been working somewhere already, you'd go back with a phased return. This is me putting my old HR hat on back on. And he says to me, I can't let you do that because I know you. You'll go from naught to 150 if I give you half a chance. So I had to go back part-time. Thankfully, I did. But where I found a job was about an hour and a quarter drive away each way, a commute.
Right.
So I had the Wednesdays off. So I did Monday, Tuesday, day off, recuperate, Thursday, Friday, and day off. And it was while I was there and I could just feel my anxieties just beginning to kind of level up again. I could just feel the weight. And this one morning I was getting ready for work, and it's in the room of my end. It's about a quote and it's that big, but this particular morning it was like huge. And it says, if you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you've always got.
Wow. Yeah.
And I was like, I wanted to be a coach. I've trained to be a coach. I'm qualified to be a coach. Years before I got cancer, I never believed I could do it. The universe is telling me this is what I've got to be.
If there's anything you've learned, is to believe in yourself, right?
And do it, absolutely. And that is what I'm going to do. And so that's the journey I've been on, is, you know, it's not easy. Believing in myself still takes work, but that's where I am now.
Wow. I think people can see what I mean by inspiring. You are one of the strongest people I've ever met.
Oh, thank you.
Fact. I hope this hasn't upset you or unearthed anything talking about it. I'm not sure whether you talk about it a lot or not really, but
I do. There was a couple of moments a little while ago I could feel myself welling up, but it's past now. So
I mean, you've built yourself up from a hell of a place, and you should be extremely proud of yourself. I'm sure you are.
Yes, I am. Yes.
So. How did you sort of identify, well, you said that you saw the quote, so how did you then decide that you were going to go forward into becoming a coach? What happened then? You just sort of went for it. Did you leave your job or?
No, so I still wanted to do bits of HR. I think that's right. That kind of risk averse kind of thing. Still doing interim work, which I did, whilst I kind of started to build the business up. So I would kind of like, this part-time thing's good. So let me do it on a 3-day HR, 2-day, just to build the business up. And for me, it was all about, right, get my message out there, the kind of people that I wanted to help. And this is about primarily women and men. I do help men as well, not believing in themselves. I don't want people to lose the number of years that I've lost by not believing in themselves.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Do you know what I mean?
And there are people, and I want them to think that it's okay to be them and remember to put fun back on their agenda. And it doesn't matter what fun you do. If it makes you happy, just do it. Don't be, I won't do that because I won't say it to my friends because they may not know, or they may criticize. Don't tell them, just do it. Who are they to judge and say what you can and what you can't do? And, you know, if you've got things that you enjoy with that group of friends, do that. But find your other friends that will help, will let you do this. And I when I was going through cancer, I did my bucket list. It's not a list per se. It was like a mind map of everything, and happened to mention it to one of my oldest friends. And I said, I wanted to go to the Imperial War Museum. And she said, I've always wanted to do that. And I'm like, I never would have thought that that friend would have wanted to do the Imperial War Museum.
There you go.
I keep saying to people, so, you know, share it. And people might go, oh, what do you want to do that for? But they might do something that you don't. Or just say to them, write it out, and then let's compare. Because there'll be things that they'll put on you going, I'm not going to jump out of an aircraft at 5,000 feet. But, or, you know, have a spider on my hand. But do you know what I mean?
It's have you done that?
No.
I was going to say, wow.
You can tell it's not going to happen.
Oh, wow.
Do you know what I mean? It's that thing of just do what makes you happy, yeah. And you'll find different people to do that with.
Yeah. It's just like putting it out there, isn't it? Just putting out your intentions into the universe and sort of getting out the way in a way.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. Yeah. And that's what I'm like. I think people, as you say, overthink things, and I'm a person that falls overthought. So yeah, that's what I want to help people do. I know they've got a cheerleader, whatever they want to do, I'm here behind them. Woohoo, doing it all behind them.
I couldn't think of a better person. I really couldn't. I mean, let me summarize this for a moment, if that's okay. You're a person that grew up as a middle child, and due to certain events, nothing, it doesn't sound like it was overly traumatic. It was just a collection of small moments that came at the impressionable age, let's say.
Yeah.
And you ended up with sort of quite extreme anxiety, depression, very, very strong limiting beliefs and low self-confidence and self-esteem. Mm-hmm. It was all very real to you.
Yeah.
And then you come up against cancer. Mm-hmm. You come up against an appendix. Well, I don't even know what to call that. It's like an appendix disaster, isn't it? It's absolutely.
Well, they said it was borderline peritonitis, which I think is the next.
But you had something that, you know, two very serious things that on their own would have been life-threatening. Must have felt like the world was very much trying to take you out, and you fought and you overcome those two things. And I'm sure, like, when it comes to anxiety, depression, limiting beliefs and self-esteem, it's not a case of getting past it. It's a case of working on it all the time, isn't it? It doesn't go
Absolutely.
Away.
It's
consistent work. But today you sit here looking fabulously healthy and full of inspiration. And I just wanted to summarize that, because that's incredible. That is absolutely incredible. And I don't think I've ever spoken to anyone quite like you before. So I'm very, very happy right now for you.
Thank you.
So at a risk of us both crying.
we'll have to meet up one day just to have a hug when we're
alive. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That would be great. Because, I mean, that was just incredible to hear that. And I'm proud of you. I'm sure you're proud of yourself. But I mean, what do you think, out of all of what you've gone through, all of those things, what do you think was one of the greatest lessons that you've learned that you could pass on to others?
I would say it's when people give you opinion, it's that world according to them. It doesn't mean that it's factually right. And it's sometimes their limiting belief that they're imposing onto you.
Absolutely. Really good advice.
Yeah, so I would just say, just listen to yourself, listen to your gut, because I think sometimes your gut tells you when something's not right, but your gut also tells you when it's right to go. And if you question anything and someone says, I don't know, I don't think you should do that, trying to say, well, but that's there.
I mean, your gut literally told you what was going on, didn't it? It was it told you about the chemo. You had that feeling of intuition around the. It was just amazing. I mean,
but absolutely all of them, because you know that whole thing about there's something not right there with my breast. I need to go and get it sorted or asked, checked out. But then that appendicitis, because that morning, I was driving to where I live, in Somerset. And I was driving to the other side of Bristol for work, and I went so far up the M5 motorway and turned around and come back to say to me, I can't carry on. I need to go and see my doctor that
Something's
morning.
Something's wrong. Yeah.
Something's wrong. That stomachache now is telling me, nah, don't carry on.
I mean, that feels to me, this for me sitting here in this moment, there's this strong feeling of the universe is trying to send me that message, because you've just said that. And then obviously that we're recording in the week where that young girl pulled out of the Olympics as well.
Yeah.
And it's like, it is about, people have to realize that you have all the answers and you have to back yourself. You just have to. You just
Absolutely.
Have to. There are people that love you. There are people that mean well. And, you know, a lot of your friends, I'm absolutely sure that they're not trying to sabotage you or give you bad advice. It's the world according to them, isn't it?
They're trying to protect you.
They
That's
are.
What people do. They try to protect you. They don't want to see you get hurt. And, but yeah, it's that whole thing of, you know, it's like scared of heights. My dad was always, that's why I'm scared of spiders. My dad was scared of spiders.
Yeah, that's always passed down, that one, isn't it?
That one is.
Yeah, I'm scared of snakes. I've only seen 3 snakes in my life. Who are you talking about? It's like, how can I be scared of them? It doesn't make sense.
Exactly.
That's a great lesson to pass along. I mean, equal in that, I mean, if you could go back in time to give yourself some advice, what would it be, and what age would you go back to? Just curious.
God, I remember reading that question. I think, God, that's a good question. I think it would probably have to be my 20s.
Right.
I think that whole early 20s, because, you know, you're out and about and you're having fun with your friends, but you still are stifling yourself because of a comment that perhaps they might make. And I think that was the kind of, I was, you know, you go on dates and you kind of go in, well, I'm too boring or whatever, so I'll end that before they end it so I don't get hurt kind of thing. And I think then you get that pattern of it not happening. And I think, going back to my early 20s and believing in myself more, maybe life would have been a little bit different.
Yeah.
Maybe a lot different. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That is a very difficult age, isn't it? Early 20s. I remember I was very fortunate in the sense of that I met my wife around that time. She wasn't my wife at the time. She became my wife, and she was the game changer for me in the end. So I was very lucky on that. But I know a lot of my friends struggled around that time, men and women. It's just a very hard time. So I think that's it's interesting. I've asked that question many times and many people say around that time.
Yeah.
Do you have anything that you would like to share that you feel might help someone move forward with their self-development?
I always keep saying, just keep learning about yourself, understanding who you are, what it is, what your values are, what things mean to you. And when I say this, it's very much about words. You know, we can always look in a dictionary about a certain word and what it means, but actually, what does that word mean to you? It's a bit like, what does happy mean to you? What does, you know, when someone says I always say living life more fully, what does that phrase mean to you? Because, you know, it's not right or wrong. And I think, that's the bit to go on is, you know, if I'm peaceful, if I'm content, if I'm loving life, then that's okay. But it's what it means for me. I just think that's so important. And when you're chatting to somebody, be inquisitive about what that word means to them as well. Does that make sense? Because I did a coaching session just before lockdown. There was a coaching sort of CPD day with HR, and I remember them saying in every conversation there's 6 people. So even now, us two talking, there's 6 people: the person I think I am, the person I actually am, and the person I think you are, and vice versa. And that was so pinnacle, because you kind of think, you know, it's you think you are someone, actually it's no, who actually am I? Just
And I suppose that's ever evolving, depending on,
absolutely,
you know, like all of our different roles. Like for myself, I'm sat here now as podcast host, but in a moment I'll be dad, and I was about to say wife. I won't be wife. I'll be husband.
You never know.
Well, I don't think we should go there.
Do the podcast.
We're always playing different roles, but you know, there's that underlying sense of who am I on my own when I'm not those things, and who are you on your own when you're not those things, you know?
Absolutely.
Very important thing to think. This has been fabulous. I'm so, so grateful for your time today. You're a hugely inspirational person to me, and I hope that we get to stay in contact and speak frequently.
Yes, it'd be lovely too. And thank you again so much for inviting me to come along to your podcast.
Oh no, absolute pleasure. It literally was all mine today. So thank you so much. I mean, what's next for you, speaking of that?
I've just been invited actually to do a podcast in Australia on breast cancer.
Oh, right.
So looking forward to getting that date in the diary.
Is that a Zoom one or is that...
Basically, I went on I was told about a thing called Podmatch.
Right.
Okay. So I just registered with that, and someone from Australia who's a podcaster about breast cancer has found me, and wants me to go on. So literally, his early days, we're trying to get a date in the diary. So probably a bit more complex in your diary because we've got a timeline difference.
Oh yeah, I've done that with some people in the States, and I've been terrified that I've booked him for 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah,
I don't think my family would appreciate that.
But obviously, I'm also talking to companies about going in and talking to their staff about, you know, managing their limiting beliefs and, you know, inspiring them and sharing some of the tools I now use to look after it. Because it's quite rightly, as you said, it's every day. You know, I said to that thing of, I'm never going to let that battle me or never, you know, let that stop me. But actually, it's easier said than done. And it's daily, I have to sort of think about, you know, what I need to look after myself and my mind.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. I mean, that's the difficult bit, isn't it? We love helping people, supporting people, but we have to make sure we keep a little bit for ourselves, don't we, and our families, which is not always easy, because sometimes we do come up against some very difficult stories to listen to, and it all takes energy, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. You've got to make sure you've got the time for yourself to recover.
That's right. Once again, thank you so much. Tell people where they can find you and how they can get hold of you.
Okay, so you can find me on my website, which is louisemacmillan.co.uk. Macmillan is spelled really strangely. So if you think of the football team AC Milan, change the first A to an M, and that's how you spell my surname of Macmillan. So go with it. You can find me on LinkedIn and you can find me on Instagram. And my handle there is Living Life More Fully with underscores between each of the words.
Thank you so much. We shall speak soon, I'm sure. But thank you for your time today, and it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much. Take care.
And you. I'm sitting here now with goosebumps, as it never ceases to amaze me what people can endure and keep moving forward. Thank you so much, Louise, for being kind enough and brave enough to share your story with us. It was an honour to listen to, it really was. So thank you so much. As always, a genuine and meaningful thank you to all those sharing and leaving reviews. It honestly, honestly, honestly means the absolute world to me. Thank you. Thank you so much. For those of you who have been kind enough to follow me on social media, you may have seen that I've started a community called School of Self-Development. It's a place where people can come together, share stories, learn, grow, and develop themselves, all the while being able to offer support in a judgment-free environment. We would love you to join our community, so if this sounds like a bit of you, please hit the link in the show notes. If you fancy further perspective on self-development, come and find me on YouTube and social media by searching The Self-Development Coach. Thanks again to my podcast producer, Charlie, and I'll catch you next time for another episode of The Self-Development Podcast.